Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Opioid deaths fueled by fentanyl are on the rise in California. The state dashboard shows a roughly 25% increase from 2020 to 2021. But drug overdoses jumped to 45% that same period when isolated just to the synthetic opioid fentanyl, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. The trajectory is truly staggering when looking back the past several years. In Sacramento County, there were 57 opioid-related deaths back in 2019. In 2021, just 2 years later, that number rose to 174. That's a more than threefold increase. And this is increasingly impacting young adults and children. The most recent data from the state reports fentanyl deaths jumped 625% statewide among 10 to 19-year-olds. And often they're unaware that they are taking fentanyl. I go back to one of the first conversations I had as host of Insight last year with a parent who lost their 22-year-old son from fentanyl poisoning, self-medicating, but unknowingly taking a pill that was laced with fentanyl. In response, the California Department of Public Health offers free naloxone to schools to reverse an opioid overdose. And Sacramento City Unified is one of the districts stocking this life-saving medication across all campuses. Victoria Flores heads the Student Support and Health Services at Sac City Unified and joins us now. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, this may be new for a lot of people. What is naloxone and how does it differ from Narcan? Are these interchangeable words?
They're interchangeable words. So naloxone is the type of medication, and Narcan is just the brand name. And that's the name of the naloxone that we were able to get for free through the state.
What exactly does it do?
So it blocks those opioids from impacting your health system. I mean, I'm not a medical doctor, but, when you are having an overdose, it starts to shut down your breathing, you know, and that's where you end up losing people. And so that Narcan or naloxone blocks that from happening and is pretty instantaneous in reviving individuals.
And this is in addition to other resources or that you have available on campus for allergic reactions and things like that as a tool in prevention in the event that someone is in a life-threatening situation.
Correct. Schools stock a number of these kinds of, you know, medications or equipment. We have EpiPens to stop an allergic reaction, oftentimes when individuals don't know they have that allergy. AED machines to restart hearts if we, you know, anyone on our campus goes down. And so now we are adding this naloxone or Narcan right there to that same kit. So our staff know to go right to that source, and that's where all of those life-saving, you know, equipment or medications are held.
You know, this is one of several conversations we've had on Insight regarding fentanyl in the last year and a half. And unfortunately, this is continuing to be a growing problem. These conversations and really the responses that we're talking about have been growing in even recent years, even before the pandemic. Given that your focus is student support and health, what have you been seeing with Sac City students in recent years?
You know, we know the pandemic has just had such a huge impact on our students, right? And being home, coming back to school, everyone coping with that stress and the trauma, the loss that's happened for so many of us. And so we knew we would predict, you know, that we'd see more depression, anxiety, you know, nervousness about coming back to school. And with that, individuals really trying to figure out how to cope, right? And sometimes we do healthy things for coping, and sometimes we do unhealthy things for coping. And so, you know, this is one of those things that we've sort of seen across the board, and just a way that we're really trying to make sure we can save lives, notice, you know, when someone on our campus is struggling with these kinds of issues and link them to support and services, you know, really just inspiring that there is hope and there is healing.
Yeah, I mean, you really have this front row seat to these challenges, from learning loss to mental health to a lack of connection. And, you know, you explain that in some cases that may turn a student or a child to off-market prescription pills. How do they have access to this, from your understanding? Yep.
From our understanding, we are, and it's very easy to access these pills, particularly through social media. So if your child has any kind of social media account or a cell phone, which most of us do, I mean, these are lovely at keeping us connected, you know, to our friends and social systems. The downside is that we can also access things, you know, that we really shouldn't. And so we really want to encourage all of our community, only take prescription medication that was prescribed by a doctor and picked up at a pharmacy. You know, this is where we're seeing, you know, kids thinking that they're buying something legit through social media, and it's not, and it does contain fentanyl.
Yeah, I mean, this also raises that the culture surrounding prescription medication is different compared to recreational drugs. And we've had this conversation on Insight. There's more acceptance of taking a prescription, which can open one up to abusing that prescription and turning to purchasing counterfeits, even on social media, as you say. How does that specifically impact youth?
You know, I mean, I think this is one thing that youth, you know, sometimes look for. They think, to much to your point, well, I'm not using drugs, it's a prescription, except that it's really not. And so that's where, you know, I think our youth really just need to have some education, understand what's happening and what's being marketed, you know, kind of to them. And then understanding, you know, how to talk about it. There's so much stigma around mental health or even substance abuse that we really want to lift that, be able to talk about these concerns, talk about, you know, if our students are starting to use, and get them linked to treatment.
Is it often the case that they may be looking for one kind of prescription and then unknowingly it's laced with fentanyl?
Correct. Yes. So we've heard of things, you know, when you do the research on this, things like, you know, Adderall, or you're looking for some kind of anti-anxiety medication, ADHD type medication. And these are not real pills, but they look exactly the same. The DEA, you know, there's lots of good information out there on how they look and how they differ, and the different types of, you know, emojis that might be used to market. So this is really just about educating, you know, ourselves as adults in our community, as well as our young people.
I know that this is a preventative measure, stocking Narcan and Naloxone on all campuses, but have there been instances of drug overdoses on school grounds in recent years?
You know, not that we are aware of. We did have one, you know, incident last year where an individual was taken, you know, to the hospital, and we understood later that treatment was provided. And we always want to protect, you know, student confidentiality. We've had parents come forward. We've learned of other, you know, students struggling this. So as we've learned about this, we knew this was an action that we really needed to take. We've seen this nationally, locally here in our state, and now in our county. And by bringing Narcan to our campuses, we want to be able to save a life, right? That is really, you know, our ultimate goal when our children are in our care, or any community member on our campus. We also want to help educate and bring awareness to our community.
And this was rolled out in your district about a week ago. What has the response been like?
You know, the response, I think, has been pretty good. You know, We like we say, we do this every year with EpiPens and AED. So it's just sort of adding that other layer on. You know, we've been heartened that people are, you know, open and welcome to having this on campus. They know, you know, that this has been a concern. You know, opioid use cuts across our whole community. Many of us maybe are personally have some knowledge of someone who's struggled with this. So I think it's something that really hits home for a lot of people.
This comes at a time when the California Department of Public Health has issued a new warning about a new trend called rainbow fentanyl that's circulating around. And these are brightly colored pills that the DEA believes are meant to target young people. How is the district responding? What do you want families to know about rainbow fentanyl?
Yeah, we want them to be aware that this is something that's happening in their community. And really what we asked our families in that communication that we sent out is to talk to their student. And we gave some tips and a handout, you know, just to start that conversation, whether it's in the car, you know, on the way to or from school, or maybe taking a walk, is to know that this is going on, talk to their student about rainbow fentanyl, about how dangerous it is, and what to do if they're ever in that kind of situation where someone's trying to maybe get them to take something they're unsure about. You know, having those sort of code words or those outs, that's really what we would like to do. We'll also be bringing awareness to our campuses. There's many community-based organizations that do this kind of education, and we are looking to partner with them as well.
Yeah, it kind of looks like candy.
It does. Yes. Yes. And we understand, you know, it's in chalk form and all of these other different types of forms.
Yeah, we're going to have a broader conversation about this in just a few moments. But on the topic of being proactive, what types of health education is offered at Sac City Unified to educate students about the dangers of fentanyl and other substances?
Yeah, so, we have Red Ribbon Week that talks about, drug and tobacco education that's coming up here soon, and, different kinds of education, throughout our district. But this is a specific type of education we really want to bring to all of our campuses across the board, because this is such a, kind of a newer, really dangerous trend in our community. And so that's what we'll be looking at doing this year.
What are the challenges logistically to rolling out this type of really specific health education across all campuses? You have more than 40,000 students in the district.
We do, in about 76 schools. And so, we really want to start at those, our high schools, middle schools, really where we, see the most social media use and have that highest risk. But all the way down, bringing that education down, much like we do with social emotional learning, right? This starts young, and just being aware of our own boundaries, how to, manage that and respond to those difficult situations.
As the Executive Director of Student Support and Health, what other challenges are you focusing on?
In this rollout?
Yeah, because I would imagine often, as we touched upon in the very beginning, it's interconnected. So, what are your concerns and your priorities for students as, we're still very much still grappling with the sacrifices that were made during the pandemic?
Yes. Health and well-being of our students just cuts across the whole board, right? Physical health is so related with our mental health, really just making sure that our students are okay, that they know what to do if they're not feeling okay, whether it's themselves or a friend, how to get help, right? And to know those safe people on campus. It's really important that all of our students feel connected and safe on campus, whether that's, someone who's a social worker like myself or a school nurse, all the way to, some of our other support staff. It's really about knowing that you can talk to a trusted adult and get help, link that student to help. We have a lot of supports on our campuses right now. That was one of the responses we did in the pandemic, was to increase our support staff that are available on campus. And so we just want to be there, to be that safe place to land and to help them, again, find that hope and that healing moving forward.
Finally, where do adults, parents, guardians, teachers, staff, mentors, where do they fit into this conversation? What advice do you have to approach this topic to youth?
Yeah, I think just starting to talk about it, even saying, hey, I heard this program today on public radio talking about rainbow fentanyl. What have you heard? Right. And just opening that door with our young people, sharing our concerns. Right. This sounds really scary to me, as an adult. That's not something I had to deal with. How does that feel to you? And just opening that door to that conversation, doing it in a non-threatening way. Oftentimes our young people will talk to us a lot when we're riding in the car because we're not necessarily face to face, or maybe walking. That's really our hope for every adult in our community. Start that conversation.
Victoria, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us and for doing this story.
Victoria Flores heads the Student Support and Health Services at Sacramento City Unified about stocking naloxone, also known as Narcan, to reverse drug overdoses in response to a rise in opioid deaths fueled by fentanyl. Up next, we're going to talk to a journalist who took a statewide look at how substance abuse is taught to students, if at all, and found that this type of health education can vary greatly from one school to the next. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We just heard from Sacramento City Unified about the preventative measure the district is taking to help or even save children from drug overdoses by stocking Narcan on all campuses. But aside from prevention on the back end, there is concern about the lack of education about the dangers of fentanyl and other dangerous substances. Some districts do it well, others don't. According to reporting by our next guest, only two-thirds of California middle and high schools teach health education, and many times the classes are optional. And here's why this is important. Last year, almost 800 Californians under the age of 24 died of fentanyl overdoses. That's more than 20 times the number of deaths in 2016. Also last year, fentanyl is blamed for more than 80% of all drug-related deaths among California's young people. Carolyn Jones is a senior reporter at EdSource and joins us from Oakland. Carolyn, thanks for being here.
Sure, happy to be here.
So we just heard from Sac City Unified about them and as well as other districts stocking naloxone, Narcan. In your research, have you found that this is commonplace in other areas across California?
Well, it's more and more so. I mean, since we've seen this surge, particularly this fall, more districts, including Los Angeles Unified, have started doing that and also really taking a close look at how they're educating kids about the subject.
You know, the numbers are just staggering, you know, from year to year. When we're talking about the fentanyl use in California, what exactly is going on? How prevalent has this become in schools or impacting specifically young people and teens and children?
Well, as you said, I mean, the numbers are just really staggering. Last year, you know, close to 800 people in California under age 24 died of fentanyl overdoses. And just to put it in context, this is at the same time that drug and alcohol use overall is going down among young people in California. So there's just been this huge uptick that can really be pinpointed on the prevalence of fentanyl with really tragic results.
Yeah. And the concern here in your reporting really is the lack of education. In the beginning of this conversation, we mentioned many schools do not offer health education courses in middle and high school. That's mandatory. So let's just dive into that. What did you find?
Well, it was really interesting. It varies really from district to district, even from school to school, from class to class even. I was really surprised to learn that California has this wonderful K through 12 health curriculum, health standards, that's very detailed and thought out, and health educators worked on it for years, and it's been adopted and so forth, but it's not mandatory. So some districts do a great job teaching this, and other districts don't for various reasons. I mean, one is which, you know, when kids get into high school, there's so many college prep classes they have to take, you know, to get into UC or CSU. And so sometimes there's just not room in the schedule to have one more required course. You know, is it going to be that fourth year of Spanish or is it going to be a health class? So some schools might offer health, but it's just an elective. I found very few that require it.
Hmm. So is it also, where do mandates and policy fit in, or does funding also fit into the fact that it's optional? It's not mandatory, even though it's a wonderful program rolled out throughout the state.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to hire a health teacher, obviously, so that would cost money. A lot of districts instead will contract with a local organization to come in and teach a unit, maybe in a biology class or an English class or even a PE class on health or, you know, drug education, tobacco education, alcohol, and so forth. But very few offer a dedicated class. And what you get in a dedicated health class is that, you know, you get other benefits too, you know, nutrition, exercise, mental health, certainly, you know, how to form positive relationships and how these things all sort of interweave together and also tie into the curriculum as well.
Mm. Given that some districts invest in it, others don't prioritize it for a variety of reasons. When focusing on kind of like the gold standard districts that are investing in this type of health education, how are they making that possible?
Well, it's been a decision that districts have made, you know, probably from the school board on down to really prioritize student health. And sometimes it's in response to a real community crisis with drugs and alcohol. I talked to some people down in Redondo Beach, and like many beach communities in California, there's a lot of drugs. you know, I think when you combine affluence and kind of that California beach culture, that's what you get. And if you look at the drug use among young people in those communities, it's pretty high, mm-hmm. and also high in the community. And so Redondo Beach said, you know, let's just really get serious about this. And they adopted this really thorough, comprehensive drug and alcohol education for young people starting in seventh grade. And it really seems to have made an impact. I think drug use and alcohol use among young people there is less than half what it is in comparable communities, which I was really surprised by.
Hmm. Yeah, we can often sometimes get a little cynical about health education, but that's actually showing results in actual data and numbers been reducing, you know, the number of people who would use.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I noticed is that districts that really take this seriously, like the previous guest was saying, they start young. You know, they start in kindergarten. I mean, they're not talking about heroin to five-year-olds, but they are talking about the importance of putting healthy things in your body. Don't take candy from strangers. Don't take things and put them in your mouth from people you don't know. Like, it's okay for your mom to give you aspirin, but it's not okay for that stranger to give you aspirin, for example. The importance of critical thinking, decision making, setting goals, following through on goals, you know, things like that. You can start with kids really young. And then later, when they hit about fifth grade, you know, start talking about tobacco use and vaping and so forth. I think we all remember in fifth grade when we had to see the picture of the damaged lung, you know, from smoking, I think, you know, and then when you get into, you know, middle school, maybe talk more about alcohol. And then in high school, talk more about, you know, cannabis and other, you know, prescription drug abuse and so forth.
Yeah.
So there's ways to weave it into science, too.
Yeah, I was in the era of D.A.R.E. in elementary school, so in the 90s. Any other districts stand out to you? We touched upon Redondo Beach, but is it just isolated to beach communities, or are there other districts and schools in the state that are doing this right?
Well, a lot of districts are doing a really great job. It sounds like Sacramento is doing a really good job. I focused on Santa Maria down in rural, kind of eastern Santa Barbara County. They had, you know, they had some things in their community that they were concerned about, and they really doubled down on this. And they provide, you know, counseling to students, drug education, plus an outside organization that comes in. So if a child feels like they have a problem, or they're referred to the counseling office for having a problem with drugs and alcohol, then this outside agency is able to provide free counseling for that student and their families, too. So it's, you know, really comprehensive.
When it comes specifically to using, or even if you're unknowingly using fentanyl by, you know, buying counterfeit or off-market prescription pills, when it comes to this specific issue of substance abuse, does this cross boundaries from higher income to lower income communities to urban and rural across the state?
Well, I think drug use in, you know, certainly these days crosses all boundaries. But in going through some of the data, I was really surprised to see that the more affluent communities in California had higher rates of drug use among young people, pretty significantly. And that's according to the California Healthy Kids Survey, which is a anonymous confidential survey that the state gives out once a year to students in middle and high school. And I saw that, you know, Marin County, some other affluent areas had rates close to 60% of young people saying that they were regular users of, you know, alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, whereas the state average is only 19%, and some districts were actually quite low. So that really stood out to me.
What do you think is driving this? I mean, I go back to what Victoria said with Sac City Unified, that, you know, maybe a student thinks that they're buying Adderall, you know, or another prescription pill, but it's actually laced with fentanyl.
Yeah, I think that that's part of it. You know, I think that, you know, accessibility, how, you know, it is available on social media pretty easily. And for students who might have some extra money or extra time, or might not have a good understanding of the risks, or, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure too, that all plays into it.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and we're speaking with EdSource senior reporter Carolyn Jones about the lack of health education courses taught in California's middle and high schools as the fentanyl overdose rates continue to rise. Let's talk about some of the personal stories that you profiled. They're incredibly important. There was a 15-year-old in Hollywood, and you shared their story. What do we know about their circumstances?
Well, in that particular case, it sounds like some students from a high school down in Hollywood bought something that they thought was Percocet outside of school, like at a park near school, and some of them took it. And this one, you know, in this one tragic case, this girl died. Other students overdosed and were hospitalized and recovered. So there was a little outbreak there. I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, students to experiment with pills of various kinds. And if they can't buy, you know, if they can't obtain it legally, they're going to get it illegally. And sometimes those pills are laced with fentanyl because fentanyl is cheap. It's cheap to put in these things. It gives a little extra bump, as they say. And it's easy to manufacture. So that's, you know, it's a huge risk. And that's why students have to just be extra careful.
Yeah, and experimenting has been around for decades. But what's different about fentanyl? Is it that even the smallest dose or even and just being off on a measurement by a little bit can be fatal?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Fentanyl is, I guess, 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine. And if you don't know you're taking it, you know, I mean, it's just is absolutely deadly. I did interview a woman whose stepdaughter had died of a fentanyl overdose. And, you know, there's always the question. It's like, well, did these kids know what they were taking? Did they know they were taking fentanyl? And she says, you know, I don't know if my stepdaughter knew what she was taking or not. She definitely didn't think she was going to die. So I think right now, you know, with the stakes so high, the message I hear coming from schools is, no, it's not okay. None of this is okay. You know, you should never, ever, ever take a pill that you don't know what it is from a stranger under any circumstances.
When it comes to the level of education that students receive, you did speak with some students, a junior at Long Beach Polytechnic High School. What did they tell you about the health education that they receive?
Well, she said, you know, it's great that it's there, but it's just simply not enough. I mean, she was saying that she just knows lots of students who, you know, they smoke weed every day. They don't know how to stop. They don't, you know, it affects your mental health after a while. You sort of get caught in a rut. It can affect your relationships, definitely your academics. And she feels that it's the schools. There's just too many kids who aren't getting the message. You know, no matter how many counselors you hire or how many wellness centers you open, there's just too many kids who either maybe this kind of their drug use predates all this, or the message just isn't getting through somehow.
Yeah.
And she worries about that. She wants more.
When it comes to consequences, what type of punishment happens or takes place on campuses when someone is caught with an illegal substance or caught using an illegal substance?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's against the state law for a young person to be drinking on campus, smoking on campus, definitely doing drugs on campus. It's illegal anyway, but it's, you know, definitely illegal on campus. And so schools, it's a grounds for suspension usually. And then schools have a lot of latitude about how they implement that. You know, usually in the first offense, they'll send the child to counseling or to go talk to, you know, they'll send a note home to the parents or go talk to a counselor or something. The second or third offense, they might get suspended. I think last year there were something like 3,000 suspensions in California for drug use on campus.
Is that low or high?
That's about the same. I mean, suspensions overall are going down, and I think districts are starting to kind of change their approach a little bit and be a little bit less punitive and more supportive. Think, okay, this is a kid who needs help, maybe not punishment. So there is a trend that is going down, but it's hard to say if that means the actual drug use is going down. It's hard to say.
Yeah. When it comes to, you know, counterfeit pills that look like prescriptions, is that inherently more challenging for a teacher or a staff to know that it's an illegal substance? I mean, it's one thing if you see someone drinking alcohol on campus. It's another thing if you see them, you know, taking a pill.
Yeah, I think that's why they're changing the approach somewhat to kind of zero tolerance for, you know, especially for pills. You know, the message is, this is bad. Don't ever take it.
Is there any kind of accurate, because it's really difficult to know, you know, how often or how many students are involved in this. How do districts actually learn or gauge how many of their student body are using drugs and alcohol? I mean, is there something that happens that's anonymous? And is that information reliable?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, once a year, the California Department of Education sends out a survey to, I think it's 7th, 9th, and 11th graders. It's called the Healthy Kids Survey, and it's all manner of questions, kind of measuring overall student health. And there's many questions in there about drug use, alcohol use, tobacco use, and you can really break it down by 7th grade, you know, by age, by individual school even. And it's thought to be pretty reliable because it's anonymous and it's confidential. So schools do sort of use that information to say, okay, do we have a problem? And what is that problem?
Given that the health education that is offered, which is optional, isn't even throughout California, you know, from everything that you gathered from all the conversations that you had, what do you think it will take to have something that is more evened out as opposed like a district by district basis? Are there any concrete suggestions that you take away from your reporting?
Well, the tide definitely seems to have turned with fentanyl. I do hear from a lot of parents who say, you know, enough is enough. Schools need to do more. And they're just demanding more and better health education. And districts are listening to that. And school boards are certainly listening to that. And I think as we start seeing more reports about, you know, young people being hospitalized or dying even, I think that raises the alarm levels. It's kind of a change of mindset a little bit. I mean, I think that, you know, California, you know, we've legalized cannabis and, you know, there's kind of two conversations happening. We're trying to be more, a little bit more tolerant of drug use, but at the same time, there's this dire threat to, especially particularly for young people. So, you know, it's just a question of sort of fine tuning the messaging a little bit and conversations like this and, you know, other, you know, public, you know, discourse on this, I think will really make a huge difference.
Given that your focus is like your wheelhouse is education reporting, are you surprised that the number of fentanyl related drug overdoses just continues to go up and up and up each year across the state? And of course, increasingly affecting our youngest residents.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I mean, you look at the numbers and they're just shocking. Really shocking. I mean, just to see this curve, it goes a flat, 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 and then chung, just shoots right up as soon as fentanyl arrives. I think during COVID, drug use among young people went down a little bit, probably because kids were home with their parents more often and had less opportunity. And so it was really nice to see that decline. And then to see this, the rise of fatalities just shoot up is very alarming and disconcerting.
Yeah. Finally, I go back to the mother that you talked to who lost her stepdaughter, and I go back to a conversation I had about fentanyl with a parent who lost their 22-year-old son last year. Both of them, they didn't really understand what fentanyl was or this issue until the worst possible thing happened to their family. What do you want listeners to take away from this issue and this conversation?
Personally, I think that we really need to talk to our kids about drug use and really be really, really clear. Like it's not okay ever to take what you perceive to be a Percocet. the stakes are too high. It's not the same as, breaking into mom's liquor cabinet. You know, it's a completely different thing. And the stakes are just far, far, far too high. And we really, really need to change the way we start thinking about this.
Carolyn, thank you for joining us and sharing your reporting.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Carolyn Jones is a senior reporter for EdSource. You can read Carolyn's reporting on our Insight page at capradio.org. Still ahead, we'll meet Stockton Soul to hear about how they're bringing back Soul Orchestra and learn about their melody of entertainment and education called Edutainment for the next generation. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, when you think of string instruments like the violin and cello, the reflexive connection may likely lead to classical music, but these elegant orchestral instruments have a range far beyond what we view as traditional. Two musicians from San Joaquin County saw what was lacking in their field and felt trapped. So they did something about it, not just to satisfy their own needs, but also to educate others in an entertaining way about the foundation of American music. Stockton Soul was created as a revival to the days of soul orchestra, made popular by the likes of Motown in the 60s and 70s. The nonprofit takes their performances into classrooms and throughout the San Joaquin County community, including a musical wellness event happening this weekend. Darcy Ford James is the director of Stockton Soul, which will be hosting the Sound and Mind Celebration this Saturday, October 22nd. Thanks for joining us, Darcy. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
What do you love about being a musician in the Central Valley?
I just, you know, as a string player, the arts are so vibrant, especially in Stockton, and just the variety of things that I can do. We have a vibrant bluegrass community. We have the Stockton Symphony. It's just, you know, variety. And then now we have Stockton Soul. So I just love being able to be creative and share my joy of music and love of music with everyone around me.
When did your journey as a musician begin for you?
I started in elementary school in third grade. And it just happened to be something I excelled at. I had come from a musical family. And I just continued on and through middle school, high school, and into college. And just never let it go.
You know, throughout that time, you obviously saw that something was missing in the foundation that was already laid in San Joaquin County and Stockton. What did you see that was missing that led to you to create Stockton Soul and fill that gap?
Well, for me, as I was growing up, studying violin, there was really only one type of music that was brought to us, which was Western classical music. And I listened to soul music, hip hop, all kinds of different music at home. And I really craved being able to perform that music, be part of that music with my instrument. But I thought that I couldn't. I thought that it wasn't for me. I thought it wasn't for the violin. And so, you know, I saw this in my students. I saw their needs for this, for learning music that they loved. And that's why, you know, I just decided. And with Jonathan, you know, it was something I had wanted to do, but I didn't think it would be accepted. And he had this youthful, vibrant energy that made me feel optimistic and made me feel like this is something we could do. And so that's why we started Stockton Soul, because we wanted something for the community, for ourselves, for our students, something that we didn't have growing up.
It's been around for a little more than a year now. How do you describe the vision and the mission of Stockton Soul?
So our mission is that we're a soul orchestra that educates, empowers, and inspires our audiences using Black American music as our platform. And that really is what we do. We educate our audiences and we talk to them about the history of Black American music and really show them how this music is the soundtrack of our country. And even going all the way back to the roots music, the fiddle players of the 1690s, and the banjo actually is an instrument that was brought over from Africa. I mean, it's so deep and it's so ingrained in our history, and every major movement has this musical soundtrack. And we share that with them. And, you know, I remember we did a performance at Weston Ranch, and there were students that didn't know that jazz was created by Black Americans. And that's something that really just made me feel like what we were doing is so important. We're educating the youth about their own music, and it belongs to everybody.
How did you cross paths with Jonathan Ivey?
So Jonathan was a UOP student, and we both work with a musician in our area called Joe Davi, Joshua Washington. He's a composer and great, fantastic soul musician. He does orchestral soul. And so we did a recording session together, and I took him home, and I just told him about this idea that I had over time, but I just said, you know, I don't know if anybody would accept it. And he said, well, let's do it. And just that youthful idealism, you know, I'd been teaching for 20 years, I was kind of cynical, and just someone to say and just validate my idea and say, let's do it, it just opened me up completely. And then I said, okay, let's do it. And then we did it. Yeah. And we started it.
That is wonderful. But you also faced something that was painfully unexpected with your co-founder, with Jonathan. And it's now part of Stockton Soul's identity and their message to youth. What are you comfortable sharing about what happened to Jonathan?
So, you know, we met, it was in March of 2021. And we created our idea. We were together very close through the summer. He was like a son to me. You know, I picked him up. We did everything together. And I didn't see the deep depression that he had. I mean, he mentioned a few things. But, you know, to me, he seemed happy and joyful. And so I didn't probe and ask questions I wished I would have. And so things were really picking up. We started our small ensemble to do outreach, and we were doing rehearsals. And, you know, I noticed a little bit something going on, but I, like I said, I didn't probe in the way I wanted to. And he passed away. He died of suicidal depression. And it was a shock to all of us because, you know, we didn't know how bad it was. And we wished that we would have probed more and that he would have felt comfortable talking to us. And that's, you know, we use that now. We're very strategic in the music that we choose, and we talk to students when we go into the schools about, you know, Jonathan, we thought everything was okay, and if he had just told us things weren't okay, there's nothing we wouldn't have done for him. And we encourage them to talk to everyone around them about how they're feeling, to kind of destigmatize that conversation around mental health. And people are afraid to admit when they're not feeling well, especially mentally. And we say that, and we say, please, no matter how bad it is, let people know. They want to hear how you're doing. People, we love you. We want to know what's going on with you.
Following that, you continued with Stockton Soul. How did Stockton Soul take on a deeper or different meaning following what happened to Jonathan?
It was tough to continue when that happened. I'll be honest, I wanted to quit. But everyone around me really recognized the importance of the work that we were doing. And I saw it as an opportunity to go deeper with the students and just go deeper with audiences and let them know, you know, life is difficult for everybody. We all have challenges. And music is healing. And we can take that, we can take the trials and tribulations in our lives, and we can turn them around, and we can find beauty. And I feel like it's a big lesson for all of us. And so it's now become my life's mission. It's something I feel I have to do. I feel it's what the world needs, and Stockton Soul is the perfect vehicle for it, because we all love September, you know, by Earth, Wind, and Fire. We can all dance to that. We can all feel joy. And this story has so much meaning for everybody. Mm-hmm. So,
you sent us a song performed by Jonathan Ivey, Change Gonna Come. We're going to listen to it in just a moment, but what kind of set it up for us? Help us visualize this moment with Jonathan performing this song.
So that came from this particular song. I became obsessed with it around the time we started Stockton Soul. And I just, we had to do this song, but it was in the time where we couldn't find anywhere to rehearse and we were just starting. So I decided to do one of those video mashups where I had all my friends create their recordings of their instruments and put it all together. And then Jonathan did the vocals, and my friend Brian Kendrick engineered the sound. And so we made this really cool video of A Change Is Gonna Come. And, you know, we got him singing that song in like three takes. And it was just beautiful. And it was, to us, the representation of what we wanted to bring was the change in music, in classical music, that this change is gonna come. And it, now looking back, it's been so difficult to listen to it and watch it, but it seems to really fit our mission and what we're doing. It's a perfect song.
It's been too hard living. I'm afraid to die. cause I don't know what's up there on the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know the change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come.
Yeah, that is just so powerful. You say that there's something about music that reaches out in a way that other mediums don't, and I think this encapsulates that profoundly. And as a consequence, it's paid dividends in the very, very best way to the Stockton community and San Joaquin County community. What kind of impact have you had on students and also just on what you call edutainment?
It's just been amazing. We started our assemblies in February for Black History Month, and the students have written to us and teachers have told us just the enormous impact that it has had on them learning about Black American music, but also that feeling of empowerment of, you know, we do a song called Apple Tree by Erykah Badu that talks about being who you are and not caring what people think. And that really, really speaks to them. We've reached over 3,000 students at 7 different schools. We have done a professional development in Lodi Unified for the music teachers. And every time, you know, the emotions are strong. You see the tears, you see the laughter, you see the gratitude, but just the joy. When we did September, just the students were bouncing in their chairs. They were enjoying the music so much. And like I said, music reaches, the arts reach you at a level that it's not your head, it's your heart. And, you know, I overheard your discussions with Sac City Unified and the fentanyl and just some of the tragedies and the ways to educate students. And I really think that music and the arts, it's a different way. We need the head learning, but we need that heart learning too. And that's where the music gets us.
I mean, this just must be so fulfilling for you, given that you have lived the benefit of having music in your life since you were a child. And then now you're sharing that with others and with youth and also music teachers. I mean, that must just, the response and feedback must just really be like this full circle moment for you.
It really is. It's, you know, I feel like my entire life has led up to this point. All my experiences and everything I've learned, it feels like this is the moment for what I'm supposed to do on this earth. I spent most of my life not knowing what that was, and now I do. And it fills me with so much joy. But the best part is what I know it's doing for students and the community. It's really not about me. It's about that. That's the most important thing to me.
Well, let's get to the wellness event happening this weekend on Saturday. It is Sound and Mind. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's going to be a wellness fair, and we have different exhibitors represented. We have some 12-step recovery. We have the Pacific Resiliency Center. They do mental health. We have somebody who does dance fitness. We're going to have lots of exhibitors, and then we're going to do our concert, and we're going to celebrate Jonathan and our history and how far we've come. We have Tama Brisbane is the poet laureate in Stockton. She's going to be our MC. It's going to be a great time. We're celebrating. It's really a celebration. And in the spirit of edutainment, we're going to educate, you know, the people who come about wellness and the different things they can do in their lives to feel better and take care of themselves, which is, you know, important to all of us.
Yeah, and this Saturday is just one moment to celebrate. I mean, this is really just the beginning for you and Stockton Soul. Do you have any other events or concerts in the works or coming up?
Yes, we're really excited about our holiday concert, which will be on December 3rd at 7 p.m. at Central United Methodist Church across the street from UOP. We're going to be doing a lot of holiday favorites like This Christmas by Donny Hathaway and some originals by my friend Joshua Washington, who is the Soul Orchestra composer. It's going to be a great time, so we hope to see a lot of people there at that event too.
Darcy, thank you so much for making the trip. It's wonderful to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Darcy Ford James is the director of Stockton Soul, which will be hosting the Sound and Mind celebration this Saturday, October 22nd. We have a link with more information on our Insight page. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Corral Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Chris Hagen. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Chris Feltz. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.